the Yitzcha Bris. We spoke about how a Brit signifies or implies bilateralism, a covenant, a joint enterprise, a Kadosh Baruch Hu, Am Yisrael, the will of Hashem, the human imagination. But there's another connotation to the word Brit. And a Brit is a covenant that creates durability, that creates a long-lasting relationship. We'll talk about this a lot through the year. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Brit with Avraham. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Brit with the Jewish people. Marriage is a covenant. Marriage isn't just romance. Marriage is a covenant, a partnership, a long-term commitment to one another, to each other's welfare. The greatest miracle of human anthropology is the survival of a people for 2,000 years without common land, without common language, without common skin color, without common time zone, without common dialect, and not just surviving, but thriving, and not just thriving, but affecting the world and changing the world's consciousness and revamping the world into monotheism and introducing the concept of morality to the world. I'll close it. And especially, since that people were persecuted and discriminated against and expelled and deported. How did you survive? How did we make it through 2,000 years? Normally, an ethnic group, a racial group, a national group has a common language, common currency, common flags, icons, symbols, armies, land. All of a sudden, you've got Jews all over the world, 2,000 years, running through the sands of time, being persecuted, and we're all back, and we're all together in Yeshivat Haaretzion, under one roof. The answer is Torah Sheh Baal Peh. Torah Sheh Baal Peh is a Kadosh Baruch Hu's secret handshake, secret language. It's, I can land right now in any Jewish community across the world, and matzah is matzah, or matzah is matzah, and tefillin is tefillin, and mikvah is mikvah, and Shabbos is Shabbos, and Chanukah is Chanukah, and halacha is halacha, and it's not just the practice, but the ideas. How many Jews today, I don't learn Daf Yomi, but how many Jews across the world, regardless of their skin color, regardless of their location, regardless of their dialect, how many people are learning? What's Daf Yomi today? Anyone know? Krisos, Daf, Krito, Daf, Chav. Okay, so Daf Yomi is 100 years old. But the fact they were all studying the same 4,000 pages and the fact they were all implementing the same, sometimes when I land on a plane, I chuckle to myself. Because there are about 200 people on the plane, and I know that I'm going to have an entire greeting party coming to see me for Shabbos. I'll be with the community, I'll be davening with people, I'll have meals, I'll have a warm bed to sleep in, I'll have a kitchen to raid late at night. And everyone else on the plane is probably going to some quiet little hotel room just to be by themselves for a couple days. And wherever I land is going to be, because Jews have to live in a community, because you can't have kosher food by yourself, you can't have a mikveh, you don't just, a Jew doesn't just pick a mountaintop and live there. Jews live as part of a community because halacha is a joint practice. Halacha is a communal practice. Halacha is a universal practice. Remember about 10, 12 years ago, I was on a flight from New York to Toronto. And it was a severely delayed flight. And I was in the back of the plane. And this was during the swine flu scare. Remember the swine flu a long time ago? People were really, really scared of the swine flu. You got on the plane. You didn't touch anyone. You didn't look at anyone. Everyone kept to themselves. People had masks on. Because God forbid they didn't want to catch the swine flu. Anyway, I'm sitting in the back, and I'm eyeing these three boys in the front of the plane. Clearly YU guys with the baseball hats on, as if, you know, no one can tell they're YU guys. Right? With the round glasses, faces like accountants, you know, the dress. But they've got their hats on in the front plane. They've got their ski gear. I didn't say anything to them. They didn't say anything to me. Everyone was quiet on the plane. No one said a word to each other. Swine flu, it could be conveyed just by talking. Anyway, the flight lands in Toronto. At 2 in the morning. It was severely delayed. Everyone missed their connecting flights. These guys were clearly going skiing. And it was one of those planes where you get off on the tarmac. You don't get into the terminal. You get off on the tarmac and a bus picks you up. So it's about a 2-3 minute delay until the bus came. And we all took out, those days it was Blackberries. We all took out our Blackberries and I was showing them where the shuls are and where the kosher food is and if they need a place to stay. And everyone on the plane was looking at us. You guys know each other? You didn't say a word to each other on the plane. We're all just 80. It was a small plane. 80 strangers. Like, how do you... Because, of course, we know each other, because we're Jews, and we need a place to stay, and we need from kosher food, and we need a davening, and we need a... That's the secret of Jewish community. It's the secret of Jewish identity. You know, if the Gentiles would only know the big secret for Jewish business is Kiddush. And you come to Kiddush, you hobnob with people, you make connections. Oh, I know a friend that sells tires. Oh, you know a friend that sells tires. I know a friend that sells rubber. Okay, Nishta Shabbos Karet. Let's put it together. Okay, they'd crash the Kiddush. That's where we make all the business deals. That's why business is all about connections and trust. Oh, I trust you because you're not gonna betray me. You tell me the guy is legit. So, of course, I'll invest the money and I'll give him some money and I'll form an alliance. But seriously, aside from business, Torah Shebaal Peh is a secret code. Torah Shebichsav is a universal document, universal ideas, morality, theology, history, God, creation, selection, family. And Torah Shebichsav is intended for an international audience. In the beginning of Devarim, Torah Shebichsav is translated into 70 different languages. Rashi, in the beginning of Devarim, Ho'il Moshe Be'eras HaTorah Zos. It's intended for a broad audience. Torah Shebaal Peh is uniquely intended for Jews. It's usher to teach Torah Shebaal Peh to a Gentile. I remember I had this question I received about 22 years ago when I first started writing these methodology articles. This beautiful article from a pastor in Memphis who said he reads my Talmudic methodology article every week and he shares it with his congregants. And it was a beautiful letter with such Kavanah Torah and such respect and such reverence. So first of all, I passed it around for everyone to see what Kavanah Torah is. And then I made a beeline for Rav Lichtenstein. I said, Rebbe, am I violating the Isser of teaching Torah Shebaal Peh to a Gentile? So Rav Aaron told me it means sitting with a Gentile and teaching them methodology and teaching them, like I'm teaching you, how to read a Tosfos, how to read a Gemara, how to build a Sugya. If you write a shiur, you put it out on the internet and a Gentile happens to read it, you're not violating teaching Torah Shebaal Peh to a Gentile. Why? Because Torah Shebaal Peh is a secret handshake. Torah Shebaal Peh is intended to be... You can't learn Torah Shebaal Peh unless you have a Rebbe. It's almost impossible. There are few people in history who are autodidactic and learn Torah. Torah Shebaal Peh, basically, if you have textual skills, you're going to pick up the Bible and read the Bible. Torah Shebaal Peh, it's impossible. It's stream of consciousness. It's convoluted. It's backwards. How are you going to know when you read that base that you really have to look at Nun Tes and Vav? Because I taught it to you. And how did I know? Because Rav Aaron taught it to me. And how did Rav Aaron taught it? Because the Rav taught it to him. And it's a Masara. And without a Rebbe, the Chazon Ish was unique. The Chazon Ish didn't really have Rebbeim. He was the type of person who was autodidactic. He could just sit and study Torah Shebaal Peh. But by and large, you need a Rebbe. By and large, you need to be part of the Masara. Because this is the treaty, getting back to that Gemara and Gittin, this is our bris of survival. We would not have survived 2,000 years if not for Torah Shebaal Peh. Simply impossible. It's our secret handshake practice. We band together. We stick together. Wherever we land, we need matzah. We need food. Right? Adib, you're over the house for Shabbos. It's obvious that if there are swarms of Jews coming to Calgary for summer vacation, it's obvious the Calgary community has to try to find a way to help them. That's what communities do. You don't just let people come into town. Maybe tonight we'll talk at the VOD about the difference between living in a big community or living in a small community. But one of the nice parts of living in a small community is you walk into shul and you know people who are visitors. Boys who daven here in large shuls, you even know that? Large shuls, you don't even know who's a visitor, who's not, because there's so many people coming in and out, you just can't tell the difference. But in small communities, if you're a visitor, people come over to you and say Shabbat Shalom. People come over to you, where are you from? People come over to you and say, do you need a place to eat? Do you need a place to sleep? And it's obvious that you just take people in. You're not going to let someone just can't eat in the local pizza shop. You can't eat in the local restaurant. You take them in. So it's our common language. It's our common bond. It's our common thought. Just sometimes go through that library and think about all the great people throughout the last 2,000 years, all the Rabbanim, the rabbinic tradition, who instead of probing the depths of the universe and nature and science, and they spent every waking hour trying to get to the core of Hashem's will through this system called Torah Shebaal Peh, and understand it and analyze it and write svarim about it. So the reason Torah Shebaal Peh is called a bris is not just because it's bilateral and it's a union of Hashem and human beings, but also because it's a treaty of survival. Hashem tells us, if you keep Torah Shebaal Peh, I promise you, you'll survive. And that's why Rav Amital always told us that the shiurim that lasts longest, and Mirza Hashem, keep this in mind, one day you'll be a president of a shul, you'll be building a community, you'll be the adult education, you'll be in the young Israel of. And Baruch Hashem, today, we've returned to areas of Torah which were neglected in the past, Torah Shebichsav in particular. But the shiurim that lasts the longest are always Torah Shebaal Peh. Your community and its shul and its learning will not last unless you have Torah Shabbat Pes. So have all the shiurim and musar and machshava and Torah Shabbat Chsav and everything. But there's got to be a Gemara shiur, because that is what Jews do. We try to create this language, this place of study, this field of study. In fact, in a very famous tshuva, does everyone know who the Beis Halevi was? Beis Halevi was Rabbi Soloveitchik's great-grandfather, right? Rabbi Soloveitchik's grandfather was Reb Chaim. Reb Chaim's father was the Beis Halevi. In an iconic and seminal tshuva, the Beis Halevi says that on the first Luchos, before the Egel disaster, there was no Torah Shabbat Peh. Torah Shabbat Peh was inscribed on the Luchos in some miraculous fashion that I can't explain to you. If you looked at the Luchos, you could divine not just Torah Shabbat Chsav, but also Torah Shabbat Peh in some way that was miraculous, supernatural. But then Am Yisrael sinned. And then the notion of Galus became inevitable. Had we not sinned during the Egel, Galus would have been avoidable. We would have marched into Israel, launched Utopia, history would have ended. Everything you know is just a detour. The original plan of history was to end history 3 months after it began. History began in Nisan, redemptive history, HaChodesh Zeh Lachem. We're meant to get to Israel more or less by the summer. Fight the wars, empty the land of paganism, build the Mikdash, Utopia. No Jets, no Giants. Maybe that's a good thing. No Jets, no Giants, no Los Angeles, no Teaneck, no Far Rockaway, no Calgary, nothing. No Aleppo. We're meant to be in Israel. Everything has just been one long detour. But then we sinned, and then we rerouted history, and then TABC storm track became something inevitable. Of course, harsher moments such as Spain and Russia and France and Yemen and Siberia and everything that we visited. And Hashem says, at this point, look at my hands, I've got to cleave them. I've got to take Torah Shabbat Peh and autonomize it and sever it and create independence. I've got to create two systems to Torah. The system of Torah that everyone will read, by the way, not just will they read it, they'll corrupt it. Christianity read Torah Shabbat Chsav, adopted its core values, but of course corrupted it. Anytime there's an adaptation, there's a corruption. So are we happy that Christianity read Torah Shabbat Chsav? Of course we are, because it converted the world into monotheists. It turned them from savage and heathens into civil, rational monotheists. But any time there's a draw, there's a corruption. You first see this in the Greeks, and we'll talk about this a lot on Hanukkah, where the world is first starting to study Torah, it corrupts Torah. It's a two-way, it's bilateral. Are we happy that Islam adopted and typecast Torah Shabbat Chsav? Of course we are, because it converted the Islamic world into monotheists, but it corrupted it, and we'll talk about the corruptions of Islam. So we're happy that Torah Shabbat Chsav was adapted, but Hashem took Torah Shabbat Peh and encased it. This is a separate tradition. This is an oral tradition. The Gentiles, they're not going to know whether a wall is intended to prevent Hezekiah or something else which we'll describe today. Now, why is that important? That's just one nugget in a broad attempt to build Hashem's will. If we know the laws of neighbors and the laws of partners and how this impacts their relationship, we start building how society is meant to look based on HaKadosh Baruch Hu's will. We can start imagining Hashem's will about our experience. And that you won't get from Tanakh. You can't get that from a pasuk in Tanakh. Pasuk in Tanakh is, V'ahavta l'recha kamocha. Go figure, what does that mean? It's too loose, it's too vague, it's important because it's general. And remember, I worked for IBM in the 80s. We actually built an internet before there was an internet. We grouped 80,000 IBMers together in 1986, and we found a way for them to talk to each other through telephone lines. Who would have thought? So I was in the IBM staff, and we built this intranet. And most of the staff, let's just say they weren't exactly yeshiva bacher. They cursed. They weren't shomer negiah. Normal, good people. Enjoyed working with them. But it was clear that Michael didn't touch women, and it was clear that Michael didn't gossip, and it was not Michael, and it was clear that Michael didn't. But then all of a sudden, there's one guy who worked with me on the staff named Larry Williams. Larry Williams was the priest in his church. So Larry was a religious guy, so we started banding together. We were the ones who didn't kiss women, and we were the ones who were careful about the way we spoke. Larry realized that I could write some really nice sermons for him. So every Thursday, Larry and I would sit down and I'd help him write his sermon for Sunday. So I remember one Thursday, Larry said, let's write. I said, Larry, I'm not going to write it for you. You have to give me an idea and I'll help you develop it. I'm not going to make a decision for you. I said, Larry, what do you want to write about this week? He said, I want to write about love thy neighbor like thyself. I said, great. What aspect about it do you want to talk about? He looked at me like a deer in the headlights. What do you mean, Michael? Love thy neighbor like thyself. If you ask me, v'haftarecha kamocha, what's the definition? Who does it apply to? What's the p'tor? What's the relationship between that and sinna? What's the relationship between that and v'chechicha imach? How does it apply? How is it doch? I'd start to parse and dissect and apply and get greater resolution. He was like, what do you mean? Just talk about it. And then I realized, oh, you don't have Torah Shiva. You just have aphorisms in the Bible. But we take it and ground it. We're grounded. We're not just talking about neighbor. You could be a good neighbor. What do you mean be a good? Be a nice neighbor, of course. Bring over apple pie and cobbler. Bring over chocolate chip cookies when they lose their parent. Don't play your music too loud over the picket fence. Okay, that makes sense. But what about nitty-gritty? Let's try to iron out Hashem's ratzon. So it's exciting to be back in Eretz Yisrael, to be at the finish line, to have survived history, to come back and say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, thank you. Now we're back in Israel. Now we're learning Bava Basra. We're on some small little dank Beis HaMedrash in Poland, or some small little dank tent in Aleppo or Yemen or wherever we were. Now we're back in the country. We've survived. This is our ticket of survival. This is our bris. Now let's study Bava Basra. Now let's tackle Bava Basra the way it's meant to be. In Eretz Yisrael, without having to worry about what's going to happen the next turn. Yes, what could you possibly have? Go ahead, Ari.
So I have a question about